Hey everyone, we got some amazing news for you that we can finally let you know about. We've been so excited about this. This Friday on August 12th, 8 p.m. Eastern Time, we're going to be premiering our brand new show on AdultSwim.com called The Last Stream on the Left. It is live, so you have to tune in at 7:30 p.m. Eastern to check it out. That's The Last Stream on the Left on AdultSwim.com, August 12th, 7:30 p.m. Eastern. We'll see you all there. Now here's more Albert Fish.
There's no place to escape to.
This is the last podcast.
On the left.
From your glade.
That's when the cannibalism started.
What was that?
I'm following my dreams. I'm just following, you know, yes and. Follow the fear. All right, your first step is your best step. Never trust a rainbow.
That's a very good point. Are we good to go? Welcome to the show, everyone. I am Ben Kissel. That's Marcus Parks.
Hey.
We got this guy. He's a sage over here.
You know, what I've been told is that my freedom of speech is being canceled today. I guess we're all going to talk in jail today.
We put a small limitation on certain activities that you might want to engage in.
Sitting here and talking jail, just take them a little cup.
Filled
with my truths that are too real. Once again, Henry Zebrowski, too real for fucking America. Just bling, ding, 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 bling, ding, ding across the bars of talking jail.
All right. Well, stay in talking jail then. 3 squares a day. All right. Not bad.
No, actually, that's fine. I've only been eating 2 because I've been skipping lunch, but making my breakfasts and my dinners bigger.
There you go. Albert Fish, part 2. We're continuing down this nightmarish road that can only be brought to you by Last Podcast on the Left.
Absolutely. So, let's pick back up with Albert Fish in 1917 when his wife of 20 years left him for a boarder named John Straub, who'd been staying with the Fish family in their apartment, leaving Fish and all 6 of his children behind.
Now, this is sort of like when David Berkowitz's mother left him.
Yeah.
When that finally happened, it was like this was the thing that technically threw him off the edge into total psychopathology.
I mean, this is what he said threw him off the edge.
Right, so this John character went and met the now ex-wife of Albert Fish. She had 6 kids, and somehow he fell in love with her.
Yeah, well, he was staying at their place, and she lit out without taking the kids. She left all 6 kids behind with Albert Fish, alone with that man.
And what do we know about Albert Fish and kids? He's great with them.
Well,
just in terms of, like, he is really good with, like, Michael Jackson was great with kids. They loved coming to that. To his gigantic Neverland ranch filled with fun animals and carousel rides. A little bit of a semen room. But he had a bunch of just fun balloons everywhere, and everything was recorded for sound. And everywhere he was playing moans.
Yes. To the extent that he kept them occupied, I suppose.
Yes.
Think about how hard that is. 6 kids? You know how much spanking you're going to have to take with 6 kids?
All right. You're in talking jail.
Ding, 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 ding.
725 to life for being the coolest dude in the room.
Here's your loaf.
Thank you.
I think he likes the loaf too much.
Can I have a 3rd loaf now? I prefer to have all 3 now.
Yes.
So, Albert Fish, he gave this as justification for his terrible behavior, among many other justifications. He said that he had been, quote-unquote, betrayed. He had nothing left to keep him attached to this world, so he was now justified in doing whatever the hell he wanted. And his long downward spiral began fairly innocently.
I don't know, though. It never was innocent. It was
comparatively innocently.
Fairly innocently.
Yeah.
By Albert Fish standards.
Yeah, by Albert Fish standards, this is comparatively innocently, but still very creepy. The same year that Fish's wife left, his daughter, in the middle of the night, went downstairs to get a glass of water. And as she walked through the living room to the kitchen, she found her father lying on the floor, rolled up to his nose in the living room carpet. Mm-hmm. The daughter, apparently used to this sort of thing, went back upstairs without a word. And when the daughter came back down the next morning, Albert was just then unfurling himself.
Oopsie daisy. This is the dizzy part.
I want to play human cigar.
And when she asked him very innocently, just, Father, why would you do such a thing? He said,
Gee, John. St. John the Apostle told me to.
And he was called covered in beans.
Wild stuff, huh?
I'm a naughty little burrito, aren't
you
I?
You are.
Sometimes, you know, when they don't fold a burrito right, it falls apart. You know what you gotta do to a naughty burrito is
what
you gotta spank it back into shape. Well, let's get this going early.
Kinda true, actually.
I know you haven't had coffee yet, my 9-year-old daughter, but let your coffee be spanking your father.
Just think about how much more awake you'd be every day if you had to get up and give your father a good sound spanking for being a naughty burrito.
That is not right.
So this whole St. John the Apostle thing, this is when Albert Fish's religious mania began in earnest. One of his sons told a story that occurred a few years later in 1922 while the boys were playing football out on a plot of land in Westchester where the Fish family had settled following the divorce. And just as Albert Jr. was about to throw the ball, he saw his father standing on a hill, completely nude, yelling,
"I am Christ. I am Christ. I am Christ. I am Christ."
Is that your dad up there?
Is he saying, "I am Christ"?
He's Ham Christ? Weird.
He was saying it over and over and over again. And the boy, as the Fish children did many times throughout their lives, just looked the other way.
Like the American government did during 9/11.
Think about it. Well, you know, my grandmother used to stand up and her pants would constantly fall down in public places. So this isn't that unusual for people of a certain age.
But you're your grandmother, right?
This is my grandmother on my mother's side, so you can't make any jokes.
I know, but this wasn't out of some weird sexual predilection. It wasn't like she fell, her pants fell down, and she's like, "Oh no, everybody's got to come and lick my pants up past my knees."
I don't know.
Because that's when it becomes, that's a sexual fetish. That's an embarrassing thing. That's because of old age. And it probably haunted her. I don't think it haunted her.
She loved it.
So she was
she didn't even care.
So she was kind of like that Spencer's gift thing that you'd squeeze the bulb and the pants would
fall
down.
Yes.
And she laughed.
She loved it. She didn't even laugh. She didn't care. She would just, they'd be like, "Hey, Lillian, your pants are down." She'd be like, "Yeah." And then she would just pick them up.
Shame I can't feel anything on the skin of my legs.
We can't talk about this at length, but I'll go into it on Roundtable, perhaps, or maybe Top Hat.
All right. So in 1928, Fish was living with his sons, Eugene and John, on East 81st over in Manhattan. And the boys came home at about 5:30 in the afternoon to find their father sitting in his bedroom with the door wide open, sticking needles in himself.
That's the strangest thing so far. Human cigar, being Christ naked on the hill. I can deal with both of those, but now this is where it gets odd.
So when they asked him just what the hell he thought he was doing, Fish told him that he had received a message from Christ telling him that's just what he needed to do at this time in his life.
Can you imagine if he had a smartphone, how many notifications from Christ he would have had?
So many.
But on all platforms.
You know what? Quite frankly, I'm not sure if Christ didn't want him to do that. What if you're Jesus, you're bored constantly, you're in control of everything, you're like, what can I do to mess? I just want to watch a funny show today.
Would it be? Tell me, Gabriel. Do you think it would be funny to make this old man stick pins inside of himself like he's a big stinky bush?
Yes, Christ. Once again, you are true humor.
I am the Dennis Miller of heaven.
The Dennis Miller of heaven.
So naturally, after that, the two sons shuffled their by then 48-year-old father off onto their brother Albert Jr. And again, one afternoon, who knows why Fish loved doing this specifically in the afternoon, but Junior, while trying to fix a pipe that had gotten all gunked up,
because it's also Albert Fish, too, because you know that if the pipes are gunked up, fucking Hamilton did it.
Yeah.
Yeah, he was trying to get him ungunked, and he accidentally found a pair of homemade paddles hidden underneath the sink. The paddles were each about 2 feet long, and inserted into them were nails which protruded about an inch and a half outward, and both paddles were covered in dried blood.
That's what he said, is that the needles were actually also very short, too. That's the way they described it. They were like sewing needles that he had like glued or attached them somehow to these paddles. They're homemade. These are like, this is fucking the most Brooklyn thing that you can do.
This is a
and
DIY.
Torture yourself.
This is a DIY.
Yes. And he said that not only were they covered in dried blood, but they were covered in bits of gore. Ooh. Like, literally stuck on the end of, like, if you ever,
Texas
you've ever
Chainsaw
been,
Massacre style.
Like,
huh?
Literally, if you've ever been on the set of a horror movie or seen places where they build special effects, the way they do it is by they make latex and they rip it and they kind of hang it, like, all dyed with food dye, and they leave it on top of the nails. But imagine that, but it's coming from your father's ass.
Yeah, that's an intense butcher session there. I was thinking, though, if it, in case of a zombie apocalypse, this would be a great apartment to break into and steal all of the goods from. I mean, this seems like a great walloping bat to a zombie's face.
No.
I mean,
No.
You got to break the zombie's head. No. The best weapon in the zombie apocalypse, I think, is the baseball bat with the big nails coming out.
And like Harley Quinn
from
Suicide Squad.
And not be trapped inside of the building with the man who's constantly asking you to spank him because he's the reason why the zombies are here.
Well, you never know. I just feel like it could be a good bat. Good weapon.
It very much could be. So when Albert Sr. arrived home a few hours later from God knows where, Albert Jr. asked him, hey, what's the deal with the paddles?
What is the deal?
Seinfeld ruined that entire phrase, and I'm really kind of upset with him for that.
These paddles, can't use them for swimming, can't use them for boating. What are we doing, spanking ourselves with them?
Yes.
What is the deal with that?
See yourself out.
And after much protesting about his son finding the paddles, Fish finally broke down and softly said,
I use them on myself. I get these feelings that come over me, and every time they do, I have to torture myself with these paddles. Want some flapjacks?
Oh, yeah, flapjacks sounds good.
That's not raspberries on them. So, it's bits of my ass.
Oh, well, that's it. Makes it a little bit worse. But do you think he was having pedophilic tendencies or thoughts, and then whenever he would have those, he would punish himself with this spanking paddle?
I think that he tried to validate himself that that's what he was doing, because that's what we're going to find out later on, is that he believed that he was punishing himself for his many crimes.
Rightfully so.
But I think at the same time, he had already flipped reverse did so hard that he just liked the punishment.
Yeah.
This is the problem with someone who's truly this sadomasochistic, is that as much as you punish them, they love it.
Yep. That's why sometimes you just gotta give him a hug.
He would have hated that.
He would have hated it.
No, actually, I don't think so, because he would have gotten hard and would have known that you would have found it unpleasant that you was hard. Like, hugging. Can you imagine hugging a tiny, short, little, shrunken old man? I mean, like, oh, he just needs some affection and feel like the as his penis just goes up your leg.
I would have given him a Starbucks gift card then. I've never seen somebody sad to get a gift card. Never.
Is that the only way to torture Albert Fish?
I think so. Ooh, free mocha?
Ooh, yeah. I hate it!
So by the time the 1930s came around, Albert was, as far as his masochistic tendencies went, really hitting his stride. And despite the paddle incident, Albert Jr. still lived with his father in the 1930s.
God damn it.
And Jr. said that one night, he came home and heard strange noises coming from his father's bedroom.
And it wasn't strange noises like, quack, 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 woof, woof, meow.
And when he walked inside, he found his dad standing in the middle of the room, his dick in one hand and the nail-studded paddle in the other. He was wild-eyed and panting, and with every blow, Fish cried out and jumped up into the air.
Yeah, why would he walk into the room? He knows he's not studying astronomy. You know for a fact, if you're hearing those kinds of sounds when you open that door, you're not going to watch you're not going to see him like solving, trying to cure cancer or make a new telephone.
Yeah, I would have been surprised if he walked in and just him jumping rope, just like,
just doing my cardio, son.
Doctor says I have to.
Yeah, instead it was, you know,
keep the door shut. Why would he go in the door?
Never go in the door. And at this point,
no, the door was open.
The door was open.
The door was open.
Oh, that's
the door was wide. I mean, it's three noises. It's the smack, it's the cry, and then it's the jump, and then actually it's four noises. Yeah.
Because that's underneath it. It's just because
that's the baseline.
Because it just sounds like a bat got in the house and Albert Fish is trying to kill it with a broom.
Yeah, it's very black sheep.
But at this point, let's, you know, seriously though, for a second. At this point, you know that your father is weird.
Yeah.
He's an odd duck.
And literally every second you leave him alone, he's doing something fucked up. And even when he's not alone, even when you're outside playing football with your fucking friends, he goes out, which is also a very cool way to do an audible, if you want to, is have a naked old man run down the field next to the football thing, and then the whole football team knows to change positions. I think that's an audible.
Yeah, and it's also
totally an audible, good job.
It's a great way to distract a defense. You know, sometimes these lesser collegiate schools will have somebody get on all fours and bark like a dog during an inbound pass to distract the defense, and then they got an easy layup.
Yeah.
Your father's naked on top of a mountain, wiggling his cock all over the place.
Telling everybody, Jesus Christ.
Yeah, exactly. Hey, defensive end, take a look at that. Next thing you know, you got yourself a touchdown.
Absolutely. Disgusting. But he's been living with him his whole life. You think he would have learned nothing? At this point, he's literally lived the life of total depravity in front of his children, who have now taken it to be completely normal.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And the boys, I mean, of course, the boys got the real gruesome and disturbing stuff. The girls were somehow shielded from the absolute worst, I guess because they never actually lived with him.
Yeah.
And the boys, I mean, Albert Jr., he didn't tell anybody about this stuff.
Like,
he told nobody about any of this stuff that it was actually happening until Albert's trial, in which he actually did talk about it as proof to say that his father was insane and not legally culpable for his crimes.
They did it to protect him, which is really interesting. That's how technically a good father he was, which I guess at this time period means he didn't beat them with the rod or sell them to an orphanage.
Yeah.
But he literally was a good enough father to his children somehow that they he's sick, and this is like, and we,
they
called
it something he suffered with.
Yes.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And the daughters had nothing but nice things to say about him, even after it was almost certainly proven that he, at the very least, had murdered Grace Budd, a 10-year-old girl. They were still standing right by him. They called the whole thing, you know, these weird things that he did. They said it was something that he suffered with, as Harold Schechter says, like other parents suffer from a bad heart or arthritis or something like that.
They also called them his afflictions.
Yeah.
Which is very interesting. It's kind of like, you know, it's like in our house, it was normal. My mom literally said it was bad luck if you don't go for thirds at the dinner table.
Healthy mother,
so, yeah.
Jesus Christ.
She said it was like bad luck. It was like a thing where she was like, she felt like personally insulted if you didn't eat to the point of nausea.
Which is why, of course, your dog ate itself to death.
Well, it was just living in paradise.
According to your mother.
I guess so. It couldn't bark because of fat around its neck.
That's very sad. But, you know, it's interesting his kids didn't let this slip out. You know, everyone has one thing their father does that you talk about publicly. Like, I had a friend whose dad used to watch Home Improvement and eat sardines constantly, and he would just, like, talk about it. Like, that's, you know, kind of abnormal.
Yeah.
But, you know, whatever. I mean, why did these kids, like, in a conversation just be like, yeah, and you know when your dad, like, goes up to his room, spanks himself with a paddle full of nails and starts screaming? I mean, life is rough, right?
What was that, Albert?
That's what is your dad doesn't go
no,
upstairs?
My dad does normal things like molest me and my sisters.
Oh.
and then we go get locked underneath the sink. Normal things, punishments.
Slightly less normal.
Yeah, and this was absolutely something that they dealt with their entire lives up until adulthood. In 1931, Gertrude, his oldest and his favorite, was living in Brooklyn, just a few blocks from where I live now, over in Bed-Stuy.
Oh.
Yeah. And during a nice family dinner with her father and her children, this is a full family dinner here, uh-oh, Fish started squirming around in his chair. And when Gertrude asked him if his rupture was bothering him, for he indeed did have a rupture, he said,
oh, no. You see, not so long ago, I put 3 more of those needles in me.
He just said this at the dinner table?
At the dinner table, and recalling the incident years later in a jailhouse letter to Gertrude, Albert wrote,
you remember the needles I suffered with when you were living at 529 Franklin Street? They took an x-ray of me in the hospital up there. I am full of them.
Is that really what it says?
That is what it says.
I am full of them?
I am full.
So the doctor,
how when you go to the gas station and you you fill up the tank till it goes all the way to the F.
Sure,
I get a capital F from my doctor.
With needles,
needles, nothing but. I'm hungry for lunch, but I'm chock full of needles.
So the doctor looked at the nurse and was like, what do we officially tell him? Well, I guess we tell him he's full of them.
You are clinically full of them.
You are an inside-out Christmas tree, sir.
Yeah, and these people put up with this type of thing for their entire lives. When Gertrude asked Fish why he was shoving these needles inside himself, he gave him his stock because Jesus told me because of these feelings I got here, blah, 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 answer. But not surprisingly, none of his children ever pressed him on what those feelings actually were. It was, I get these feelings, I shove needles inside of me, and they go, good enough.
I completely agree with his children. I would never inquire what feelings would have to compel my father to jam needles up his taint.
I have a hard time just talking with my father about regular feelings.
I can't even talk to my dad about football yet.
Like we're building up to just getting stories from back in the day. I can't imagine dealing with the deeply dark, labyrinthian sexual fetishes that your father has. Your father is up in his bedroom inventing sexual fetishes.
Whole new things.
And you're just having a family.
Yeah. I can just now talk about if a food is over-salted with my dad.
Yes.
I was like, the ham is a little salty, right,
Dad? It's just like, criticism is good to help us all learn. It turns into a deep conversation some reason.
I wish.
I want to reiterate the fact of how scary this is.
Yeah.
I know that come back to it's like it does seem a lot of pressure. Like, remember that this man is the boogeyman. He's going to be called the boogeyman 3 or 4 times, but he was somebody's kindly father as well, which I think is the scariest factor of all.
If we want to say kindly, I'm not sure if he was a kindly father.
He was very good to his daughters.
He was great to his daughters. Right. Yeah, and even but despite all the weird stuff, still good to his sons. I mean, they said that he was a hard worker. He never drank. He never hit him, which early 20th century standards, pretty good for a dad.
Pretty good.
Yeah. He loved his kids, or at least knew how to.
He knew how to love his kids.
Yeah.
He knew how to put on the face of loving his kids.
It almost makes all of it worse.
Yeah.
Yes. Well, I think what we're going to discover is like these are the seeds that are planted into somebody's life. When later on, when they're going to try and prove that he's insane to make sure he doesn't get the death penalty, I think these are the things that show that he is not totally insane. He is sick and he is depraved and he's probably closest to evil that you can get, like a Dahmer. Like Dahmer got evil, but mostly Dahmer's came out in one big fucking gooshy explosion over a couple of years. This is 40 years of this. Building and molesting and doing all this shit. And so he knew what he was doing for a long time. He was definitely a psychopath. And this is what shows it. He knew he had to be a regular dad a little bit. But at the same time, some of the curtains are going to show.
Yeah. And this could also be a case of paraphrenia, which we talked about in our witches episode. And it's a sickness in which someone's looks outwardly sane. For all intents and purposes, their actual outward personality is insane. But what's going on inside their head is, you know, just bats and fire.
Oh, interesting. Cool. That's
like when you look at us when you walk down the street.
Yeah.
Sounds awesome, man. Everything's just like a Black Sabbath cover.
Kind of, but it's real.
Oh, it's real?
That's
you can't get out of it?
No, it's not metal and fun. That's the problem in the end is that none of it's metal and cool. It's just truly nightmare land.
The music never stops.
So in 1929, Albert discovered what would become probably his fourth favorite hobby behind the piss and shit and self-flagellation. Fish began writing horrible, disgusting letters to women whose names he got from classified ads and matrimonial agencies. And in most of the letters, Fish presented himself as a successful Hollywood producer, saying he would offer his undying affection as well as large sums of money in exchange for the performance of services for both himself and a fictitious son named Bobby.
Good fake son name.
Good fake son name.
Because if he had said something like grape soda, no, it's a fake son.
Yeah, and according to Fish, who usually used the pseudonym Robert Fisk, Bobby had been crippled at the age of 9 by an attack of infantile paralysis. But despite being bedridden, Bobby was still a very bad boy who needed frequent spankings, specifically with a cat-o'-nine-tails. And if you aren't familiar, a cat-o'-nine-tails is essentially 9 whips in one.
Ooh, so you get a lot of bang for your buck. A
lot of bang for your buck. You're saving money. You're saving spankings.
Yeah, it is designed specifically to not only cause severe pain, but to also lacerate the skin. The cat, as it's called, was also the punishment of choice for Britain's Royal Army and Navy for many a year.
Oh. The Brits are so sexually bizarre.
They're all very, and they have no chins, and they've got weak, so the British men have been watching Great British Bake Off, and these men are gross looking.
Yeah. Oh, yeah. Yeah, but they can bake, can't they?
Yeah, so they can. Many fine desserts.
You wonder if he thought, if Albert Fish got extremely aroused with the Stations of the Cross.
Yeah.
You know,
yeah. Everything.
It's quite erotic for a man of his ilk.
Everything. He was sexually obsessed with the Y. He loved going to the YMCA, every single thing, which is the least sexy place in the world.
Oh, yeah, that's
there's
true.
Upwards of 200 naked boys and men.
And Barbara Streisand in Yentl.
And Barbara Streisand in Yentl.
Now, what you're also going to find, too, is that Albert Fish is sort of like the original troll. Because it's basically, you have all these kind of people just out there literally putting their name out there for help.
Yeah.
And he would use that information in order to torture them. And he loved the feeling of knowing that somebody else was reading the thing and getting offended or upset.
Yeah, mm-hmm. He loved it. And this is what he wrote about his son, Bobby, being a naughty boy. This is what he assured the recipient of the letter, said that he is a naughty boy, but
he does not wet or muss his clothes or the bed. He will tell you when he has to use the toilet, number one, or number two. For number one, his pants must be unbuttoned at the crotch and his monkey taken out. His pants and drawers are all made up with dropsy. All you have to do is loose three buttons in the back, and down they come.
All right, well, that's disgusting. I vomited a little bit in my mouth, and I never want to hear that again.
But what is interesting is that he'd use this letter as a bait letter. Mm-hmm. So he would send
that's
this letter.
That's the bait letter?
That's the bait letter, mm-hmm. Because at the time he would say that the doctors gave him a prescription saying he needed to be beaten, and he needed to be cat-nine-tailed and every day. He had to do this every day, and he would do this and often not get a response. He just liked it. So up to this point, what he would say is say that if in return for these duties, I will give you upwards of $35,000 in a follow-up letter if they say something in return.
Yeah.
One woman escalated this for a long time, and they had it back and forth together. I cannot find her name. It is in the book Deranged by Harold Schechter. And it is but it's true, and it builds to something else entirely.
Yeah.
This is the first level of the trolling. Now we're going to see where it goes to the second level. What you get with level two.
I can't wait for level two.
I mean, this is early 20th century catfishing.
It is so bizarre to me that that's a bait letter. It reminds me of the bait cars that cops use, but if they use like a Yugo, and they're like, someone's going to come and steal this beautiful Yugo. They usually put out a relatively nice car that might theoretically be stolen by somebody. The fact that this got any response whatsoever kind of proves the person that responded to it is a little cuckoo bananas too, right?
Not necessarily cuckoo bananas, most of the time desperate. Like, horribly desperate. This is the Depression. This is the Great Depression. There are people out there that are desperate for anything, and that's what he takes advantage of. It's just desperate people.
It's also sort of like, instead of using a bait car altogether, they just use a shit-covered boy.
Yeah, I guess so.
Yeah, and that last letter, gross, right, Ben? Super gross?
Disgusting, yes, extremely gross.
Yeah,
super
gross.
Didn't think it was funny and cool?
Yeah, I didn't think, I thought it was mostly like, this is a good thing that I'll read after I ate a bunch of Thanksgiving dinner I need to purge.
Yeah, did you? So you didn't like him calling the boy's penis his monkey?
No, quite frankly, it was one of the more disturbing images I ever had because I actually pictured a monkey, and then what would that be like? You know,
attached to a crying little boy.
Yeah, it's just not good.
Now,
you know,
if you have problems with that, you're going to have a lot more problems with everything else we're going to read in this episode.
Oh, I'm already having visions of Toy Box Killer.
Oh,
I can't deal with it.
Well, this is what he would direct towards the women. This is what he was building up to.
I wish you could see me now. I'm sitting in a chair naked. When you strip me naked, you will see a most perfect form. Yours, your sweet honey of my heart, I can taste your sweet piss, your sweet shit. You must pee-pee in a glass, and I shall drink every drop of it as you watch me. Tell me when you want to do number two. I will take you over my knees, pull up your clothes, take down your drawers, and hold my mouth to your sweet honey fat ass and eat your sweet peanut butter as it comes out fresh and hot. That's how they do it in Hollywood.
That is true. He's ended it with, that's how they do it in Hollywood.
That is what he ended it with.
And guess
and
what?
You know what? He's right.
It is how they do it in Hollywood. I know for a fact.
Yeah. Yes.
You know what? When I was first reading that letter, I remember specifically. Because I got a breakfast burrito, and I was reading through Deranged, and as that letter came up, I had ordered, and this is true, extra avocado in the burrito. And so as I read it, I took a big bite of just...
Don't do it.
Gloosh. You just had a mouthful of gloosh.
A mouthful of just smushy noosh, which is what he's about to call it. And so he would talk about this, and what we don't put in this letter is that also a thing that Albert Fish had was a predilection for painting his ass different colors and shaving himself entirely. And so when this woman finally showed up to meet him, she actually, they got together and met. When she met him, she was like, well, he's obviously not a Hollywood producer because he's a shabby old man. She removed his clothes and spanked him, right, because he said, I'm going to give you this money. He was completely shaven, and his ass was painted red. He also will sometimes paint his ass gold.
I don't mind that. I think that's actually kind of normal.
I think that's fine.
He just paints his butt.
I guess it's fine. Yeah. You know what I mean? It's just
I think
like
kind of fun.
Yeah, I mean, with Albert Fish, when you take these things like one or two at a time, it's not that bad. Like that.
No, it is the culmination, right?
That letter, it's like, you know, you must pee pee in a glass, and I shall drink every drop of it as you watch me.
Sure.
Yep. You know, people write that type of stuff to each other on the internet every single minute of the day. Literally every single. There are 30 people right now writing that exact same thing to another person who loves it.
I bet there are 9 people listening to this podcast right now, actively drinking a glass full of pee.
I think that's a wonderful thing. If that's what you're into, get after it.
Of course.
The Dookie thing becomes a little bit more extreme.
It's a little more extreme, yeah. There are a few listeners out there that love the Dookie, and that's totally fine. But Albert Fish, when you take it all together.
As a career, like Derek Jeter, not on a day-to-day, he wasn't that great. But if you look at the whole thing,
totally.
Really, yeah, absolutely. Yeah. So Fish was eventually caught writing these absolutely horrific letters in a moment of hubris when he decided to take his chances with a woman he thought might be into the sweet peanut butter scenario and included his return address with said letters.
You like buckshots?
Buckshots?
You know those little Christmas cookies? They're peanut butter with chocolate in them. That's what this makes me think of. Now permanently ruined them.
I never heard them called a buckshot.
Yeah, I never heard them called buckshot either.
What do you call them?
The thumbprint cookies.
Ugh. I call them rabbit turd cookies.
Yeah. So Fish was immediately arrested and interviewed by a court social worker who described Fish's behavior as, quote, questionable. And upon the social worker's recommendation, Fish was promptly committed to Bellevue. And a psychiatrist, trying to get to the root of this odd old man's habits, asked Fish where he got the idea to write these letters. And Fish said it all started when he was working as a painter at a sanitarium up in Harlem.
It's story time with Albert Fish.
Ooh, exciting.
So one night, a chauffeur who had found a pile of dirty letters in a sanitarium garbage can.
How romantic.
Pile of dirty letters.
Sanitarium dirty letters. So crazy person dirty letters. What would that sound like?
Razzmatazz. Oh, you know, your breasts got spirals in them. Hypnotize. Hypnotize.
I can't stop reading.
So he read these letters aloud to a group of men in a weird early 20th century version of a stag party. This is kind of like, you know, when John Wayne Gacy, we get all the boys together and they'd watch porno movies in his garage. Except this was a bunch of dudes in the Depression.
In an alley of a sanitarium,
right,
reading dirty letters that were found in a garbage can. It's just like Sesame Street if Sesame Street was in shit-covered hell.
Yes. That sounds about right.
Yeah, and Fish said that after hearing the letters, he thought it would be a hoot to write a few of them himself. And when the psychiatrist asked him why he eventually came to feel as if he had to write these letters, Fish said,
"It was just sort of a habit. Just kind of a cool, fun, crazy thing I did. I've also been folding 1,000 cranes.
Oh, yeah.
Because I've heard if you do that, you get one wish. And you know what my wish is?
What's that?
Someone to shit on my face.
Well, sounds like you've already got your wish then.
Yep. So, I'm living the dream.
You can stop with the origami whenever you want.
So throughout this interview, the psychiatrist noted that Fish seemed to be quiet, downtrodden, even boring, until the psychiatrist asked Fish about his faith, to which Fish proclaimed himself to be a devoted Episcopalian. But when the doctor asked him if his habit of writing dirty letters clashed with his Christian beliefs, Fish said,
"There is no comparison."
And they didn't get another word out of him, but still declared him, quote-unquote, not insane, and let him go.
I wonder how big that stamp is.
Yeah.
Not insane.
Oh, man. I couldn't stop. Episcopalian. You think about that? Yep. That's kind of fun.
Yeah. Wow. You know what?
Our listeners were thinking it, so I just said it so they could feel validation for their thoughts.
Wow.
Wow.
Wow. Wow.
Nice.
He's the disgusting monster.
He really was.
But less than a year later, Fish was arrested and placed back into Bellevue for sending obscene letters to the proprietor of a local boarding school. And this time, police actually searched Fish's apartment. They, of course, found many, many more letters, but the letters paled in comparison to what they found in the dresser drawer. They found a cat of nine tails, which was to be expected.
That's in his bit. That's in his case. That's his shit.
That's fine. And when police asked what he did with it, Fish said,
"I whipped myself with it, although I don't suppose that's anybody's goddamn business but my own."
I'm going to say good point, Fish.
Absolutely, point Fish.
Point
Well, I'd say the only point he gets.
None of your goddamn business what I do with my cat
it's
of
true.
Nine tails.
Yeah. Yeah.
But much more disturbing was the food they found in the drawer.
Uh-oh. Mm.
Buried underneath his clothes was a decaying hot dog wiener and a carrot.
Hmm.
And for some reason, one of the cops actually picked up the hot dog with his thumb and forefinger.
I see something under this bed. Let me lick my fingers first, make sure they're good and clean. All right, let me pick it up. I'm going to put this in evidence bag. And you know what I'm going to make sure, again? Is that when you pick something up from a crime scene, just make sure your fingers are good and clean. So you just go. That's weird. Weird taste. It's got kind of a tangy taste.
Yeah. The cop held it at arm's length and asked Fish what he did with both the wiener and the carrot.
You said, "Guy, you leaving this out for some kind of salad or something?" Because it's got a hot dog carrot. Salad just seems like it sounds peculiar, but I bet if you mix it up with some spice in there, you make some lightness with some acidity, or you put some lime juice on there and stuff. So that would actually be great. So what are you doing with these?
Yeah, to which Fish replied,
"I stick them up my ass."
Oh, okay, very good. I'm gonna put it back down. I feel bad about licking my fingers now, but
he literally just said,
"I stick them up my ass."
But again, not illegal. Leave him alone.
Oh.
The carrot, I mean, at this point, so far, the cops have nothing on the guy.
I mean, can you imagine how loose his butthole has to be for him to put a hot dog up in there and then bring it back out again? The ass.
Oh, not that loose.
I mean, he doesn't have, like, all the fancy lubes that we're accustomed to slip things in and out of a butthole.
No,
the butthole is a tight thing, and dog wieners are very soft.
Do we know if the hot dog was cooked?
No, of course not.
No, okay. It was a raw dog. It was just a raw dog wiener.
He was raw dogging himself.
Is that where the term comes from?
But he had old timey lubes, were just like they don't make them like they used to. Now that was just literally axle grease.
Yeah,
he was going ew, sticking it out. We can also maybe call him a punyada.
Punyada.
Yeah. Wow. All right. So he's got a carrot, a hot dog, and a cat tail. Night, I got a little wet there. All right.
And after this incident, he was held for 10 days where neither the whip nor the food up his ass were discussed.
No reason to.
No
I would
reason
never mention
to.
It.
And Fish was once again released by a doctor who described him as, quote, quiet, cooperative, and oriented.
Oh.
Now, Fish didn't just anonymously send letters to unsuspecting single women and widows. Sometimes he'd even deliver the letters himself, with the recipient knowing full well where the filth was coming from. In 1929, Fish was sharing a room with a couple of his sons in a boarding house here in New York City.
New York!
Beautiful. I heard if you make it there, you can shove a bunch of carrots up your butthole
anytime you want, anywhere you wish.
The proprietor of this boarding house was a one Mrs. Carlson. Carlson said, like many other people who had direct personal contact with Fish, that he seemed like a harmless, middle-aged man. That was the thing about Fish, is that if people just sort of saw him off in the distance, he was creepy, he was terrible, he was the gray man. But if you got to know him, you knew that he was all sorts of fucked up. But just in general, everyday pleasantries, he was all right.
Sure.
See, the way he was also described, though, was stooped, shabby. Like, that was a thing you always hear a lot. It's that he just seems, it's more like there's pity involved. You look at a man, he's kind of got a 5 o'clock shadow all the time, a big hangdog mustache. He was wore shitty clothes, and he had a habit of clenching and unclenching his hands nervously everywhere he went. You imagine he was literally also moist to the touch. I imagine most people just assumed, oh, this is a poor little, like, bad creature. He's just, like, he's a poor, unfortunate soul that kind of walks the earth shuffling around, and so we're just going to kind of not deal with it and don't realize that now those are all the telltale signs of somebody who is a molestardo.
That's why I don't have sympathy for anybody anymore. The show has ruined me. I see an elderly person on the subway. Everyone says, oh my God, the stories they must tell. They're full of hot dogs.
Full of them.
That's why they smell that way.
Yeah, they're little street meat stands walking everywhere.
Oh my goodness.
Yeah, and speaking of molestar, he was very interested in taking this woman's little boys out for afternoons at the movies. So. Never did. Never left her children alone with Fish, so we know that. But 3 months later, she started getting letters from Albert. And after the third letter, which was apparently so terrible that Mrs. Carlson couldn't even bring herself to speak a word of it, she kicked the entire Fish clan out of her house, never to be seen again. But Fish left something behind.
Uh-oh.
When Carlson went up to inspect the room upon the Fish family's departure, she found in the middle of the floor what she could only refer to as, quote, a little mess. What we're about to read here is the actual, real, 100% true back and forth between Mrs. Carlson and the prosecuting attorney during Albert Fish's trial. Mrs. Carlson, what do you mean by a little mess?
I don't like to say just what it was. He made just some sort of dirt, and he left it behind the door.
Can you say what kind of dirt it was?
Do I have to?
What kind of dirt was it, Mrs. Carlson?
Human dirt.
Number two?
Yes.
Number two is said in the trial.
Yes.
It's literally like a playground trial. Albert Fish must have been so hard during his own trial, listening to everyone saying pee-pee and poo-poo around him like everybody's nine.
Right. If you could ask your defendant to stop touching himself, please, during the trial.
He would make, also they would say Albert Fish during the trial would just make hopeless shrugs. He would just go,
could have been
like that emoji, weird little thing.
But despite the shitting on the floor, despite the dirty letters, and despite the self-mutilation, Fish held on tight to his own twisted version of Christianity.
Now, this is a problem with these religious iconography and images that we're going to get, because he was obsessed with the story of Abraham and Isaac.
Yeah, right? In which Abraham was ordered by God to sacrifice Isaac, his only son, just to see if he would do it. And Abraham, acting on God's authority... See, this sounds a little fucking familiar.
Yep.
Bound his little boy to a piece of wood and was about to stab him to death when an angel came down from up on high and essentially said, whoa, 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 whoa. Never mind. God's just fucking with you. You passed, dude.
You did it, bro. Good work, bro.
Good work, bro. Now, just do whatever.
Hang 10, dude.
So I'm just going to kill this kid, though. It's like, do what you got to do, bro.
Whatever.
But that's it. But the problem with it is that it's sort of like what happens, especially in the Christian religion. I mean, I guess any religion, any devout religion.
They're all crazy.
That it's kind of like in heavy metal when people used to believe that Iron Maiden was really evil. Mm-hmm. And then you like listen to the lyrics and it's like them talking about the devil and stuff like that. But mostly just in a rock and roll way, it's about being fun and awesome.
But Dungeons and Dragons half the stuff.
Yeah, it's dragons and demons and shit. It's fun. Albert Fish took the stuff in the Bible, like Abraham and Isaac, that's supposed to be kind of like a funny story, I guess.
It is.
Well, it's supposed to be fake. It's obviously fake. It doesn't happen. He took it like it was really, really real, and he built his own twisted mythology around it within his own head.
People still do.
Yeah, and he took it to heart in 1924 with the murder of an 8-year-old boy named Francis McDonald. See, Fish believed that if sacrificing a child was wrong, God would send an angel at the last second to stop him. And unfortunately, no such help came for Francis McDonald, who was strangled to death with his own suspenders. And Fish was preparing to dismember the boy on the spot when he thought he heard someone approaching and fled.
For some reason, I pictured the angel as Bjork wearing her swan suit.
Really?
I think she would be a good angel if I had to have an angel in my life.
If you had to have an angel come and tell you to stop murdering the boy?
Or eating too much popcorn? Never murder, only jump.
Did you just jump?
That
just sounds Jamaican.
No, that sounds like Bjork.
No, no.
If you're Jordy Bjork, you have to sound like this. Bjork. I am Bjork. Never kill. Jump. Only jump.
Well, that's good. That's my angel. I like Bjork. Thank you.
See, Fish would not only use the story of Abraham and Isaac to justify his crimes, but he would use other Bible verses as well, taking them out of context and twisting them to his own needs. See, Fish's Episcopalian belief, I think, is very important here, because from what I can tell from the Episcopalian website.
Oh, interesting.
Ask Jeeves. When I ask Jeeves what Episcopalians do.
Yeah. It seems as if Episcopalianism is an interpretive sect of Christianity. They even have their own addendum to the Bible that they call the Book of Common Prayer.
So it's like make-em-ups.
Yeah.
It's make-em-up. It's all made up.
Yeah, it's all made up, but, you know, some of them adhere stricter, more strictly to the Bible than others. And it seems like Episcopalianism is one that gets a little bit more interpretive with it. So it's possible that this sect played into Fish playing fast and loose with the verses. For example, one of his favorites, Psalms chapter 137, verse 9 says, "Happy is the one who seizes your infant and dashes them against rocks."
It's a tough favorite.
So, yeah, happy is the person who grabs your infant by their ankles and slams their brain into a rock?
See, taken out of context, it seems like the Bible is sending messages specifically to Fish, telling him it was totally okay to kill children.
Yeah, it's basically just like, be Babe Ruth, but instead of a baseball bat, use a baby.
But when taken in context, it's really just some Jewish dude who's super upset at Babylon and is just blowing off some steam.
I don't get it.
So he's thinking something's supposed to be sarcastic. Essentially, it's sarcastic.
It's essentially
the Bible's tongue-in-cheek?
In that one section,
that's funny?
Yeah, where do you think the Jews got it from?
Their sense of humor?
Yeah.
I thought they got it from their years of being the butt of everybody's cruelty.
Yes!
There's a whole lot of places they got it from.
Okay.
Yeah. But, yeah, that's what it was. It was just, you know, and a lot of things in the Bible can be taken completely out of context and twisted for, and people can do it on both sides.
Yeah, yeah.
You know, they absolutely can. But the murder of Francis O'Donnell would be nothing compared to his next murder. Mm-mm. Fish claimed in a handwritten confession to the abduction and killing of a 4-year-old boy named Billy Gaffney.
And his parents called him Candy Boy.
I actually don't think that's a bad nickname. My parents called me Lover of Bread Ben.
What?
Yep.
They just knew then, just give him a baguette. He'll never not be smiling.
I love bread.
You love bread? Was that like a weird like German translation?
Yes.
Okay, so it was like a German, so it was like, you know, Luftwaffe.
Lufte of the Pantskins.
Something like that.
But also, so this is a really sad story because the parents left Billy alone. They came from a poor family living in a tenement house, and Billy was playing with his best friend. And when he went missing, they searched everywhere for him. It tore up this family's life, of course, as it always does. And then they asked the little boy, like, what happened? What was the last thing that you saw? When's the last time you saw Billy? And he was like, the boogeyman took him.
And hence the nickname.
Yeah.
And I want to clarify for the listeners, I mean, you know, obviously we make fun of everything on this show, specifically the monsters. We try not to make fun of the victims. And so if it ever comes across that way, that's never the intention. These are very sad situations. And this boy did not deserve, obviously, the horrific end to his life.
It's not funny.
It's not funny. It's very sad. And he could have grown up to be a train conductor. Who the hell knows? But either way, it's just why that job? A train conductor in the 1940s, 50s, when this man would have the job, would be very good.
It's an extremely respectable job.
It was certainly that.
It's a fine job.
It's
a respectable job. Oh,
next
you're
stop,
good.
Donna G train is Austin Avenue.
No, you're thinking the MTA train, which is also a very respectable job.
Yeah, being an MTA, yeah, very respectable.
Right.
So we have that written confession, and if this is true, then the murder of Grace Budd was almost a mercy in comparison. Now, we haven't done this in a long, long time. Not since our very first 911 episode. Mm. if you make it to the end of this, you get an official Last Podcast on the Left gold star.
And that gets you no money, and it gets you no, like, points off your license, and it does nothing. But what it does mean is guarantees you have a personal problem.
Yes, and technically, we don't even have gold stars.
We don't. I mean, there's nothing. It's like the Marvel No Prize. There's nothing tangible here. You just have it in your own brain.
I'm going to put it this way. So remember again, Albert Fish, everything that we know about him comes from the testimony of his children and his confessions and from the letters we got. We don't know what's real or what's fake. What we do know is that his kids saw a lot of weird shit, and their testimony in order to prove that their father was insane is gives us the basis for the fact that he lived a life of total depravity. Now, this letter is pretty rough, but who knows if it's all true. It could be sort of like fan fiction of his own life a little bit.
Yeah.
Or what he wish he did.
Yeah, a lot of times they do exaggerate the worst parts of human behavior as a point of pride, so we don't know.
Yeah, or they have the Harry Potter fuck the other boys.
That would be fan fiction.
And so this
that's slash fic.
That's slash fic.
Oh, I see.
So this is that it's his version of slash fic, maybe. Or it's real. I don't know.
You decide.
There is a public dumping ground in Riker Avenue, Astoria. All kinds of junk has been thrown there for years. I brought him to the Riker Avenue dumps. There's a house that stands alone not far from where I took him. I took the boy there, stripped him naked and tied his hands and feet, and gagged him with a piece of dirty rag I picked up out of the dump. Then I burned his clothes, threw his shoes in the dump. Then I walked back and took the trolley to 59th Street at 2 a.m. and walked from there home. Next day, about 2 p.m., I took tools, a good heavy cat of nine tails, homemade, short handle, cut one of my belts in half, slit these halves in six strips about 8 inches long. I whipped his bare behind till the blood ran from his legs. I cut off his ears, nose, slit his mouth from ear to ear, gouged out his eyes. He was dead then. I stuck the knife in his belly and held my mouth to his body and drank his blood. I picked up four old potato sacks and gathered a pile of stones. Then I cut him up. I had a grip with me. I put his nose, ears, and a few slices of his belly in the grip. Then I cut him through the middle of his body, just below the belly button. Then through his legs, about 2 inches below his behind, I put this in my grip with a lot of paper. I cut off the head, feet, arms, hands, and the legs below the knee. This I put in sacks weighed with stones, tied to the ends and threw them into pools of slimy water you will see all along the road going to North Beach. I came home with my meat. I had the front of his body I liked best, his monkey and peewees and a nice little fat behind to roast in the oven and eat. I made a stew out of his ears, nose, pieces of his face and belly. I put onions, carrots, turnips, celery, salt and pepper. It was good. Then I split the cheeks of his behind open, cut off his monkey and peewees, and washed them first. I put strips of bacon on each cheek of his behind, and I put them in the oven. Then I picked four onions, and when the meat had roasted about 1/4 hour, I poured about a pint of water over it for gravy and put in the onions. At frequent intervals, I basted his behind with a wooden spoon, so the meat would be nice and juicy. And about 2 hours, it was nice and brown, cooked through. I never ate any roast turkey that tasted half as good as his sweet, fat little behind did. I ate every bit of the meat in about 4 days. His little monkey was as sweet as a nut, but his peewees I could not chew.
And we'll be back next week.
Good. Food Network show from hell. Good God.
That's what I like, kind of. That's what's like fucked up. But you know that he would present it like it's a fun, cute cooking show.
It was a recipe for him. Oh,
yeah.
My God.
No, he did. It was so matter of fact, just a recipe, just like show.
He was twisting.
Yeah.
He was twisting it. He twisted it. He was presenting it. He was literally, I had a recipe. I had an idea for cooking this boy. And I saw through it very detailed because this is exactly how I wanted it to come out.
All right. right. Wow. That's Albert Fish Part 2. Congratulations for making it through, everyone. We're trying to have we're trying to be as light as possible with this very heavy subject matter, and hopefully you're getting a lot of information you didn't previously have.
What are you talking about? This is cute.
Yeah.
This is like a cute show. It's fun and cute. It's about a cute old man.
Yeah.
Yeah, something
like that. If you if you completely reverse what the show is.
I would say that this whole episode shows that old dogs can learn new tricks.
I'm not sure if that's right.
And it's like the Tim Allen movie.
Yeah, okay. Yeah. I'm not talking about a John Travolta Tim Allen movie right now. All right. So thank you guys so much for listening.
Yeah, absolutely. I want to thank Brianna Parrish. You can find her at briannaparrish.com for sending us the last of a series of three and the cutest serial killers that I've ever seen in my life. She just sent us a little Ed Gein, and he's got a halo of nipples, and he's got a little tattoo that says "Mom." And she also sent us a beautiful, like, little Richard Ramirez who has really bad breath, and of course, a cute little Gacy. Yeah, you can find her work at briannaparrish.com. Thank you so much, Brianna, for sending us all that cool shit. You are absolutely amazing and among my favorite artists out there. So yeah, thank you.
And Marcus is wearing a shirt we just got today from Fright Day.
Yeah.
So check that out.
I mean, I don't know.
I have no idea.
Maybe they're terrible. I don't know.
God knows. Yeah. I'm hoping you don't go there and it's just a bunch of being like, "We slam as many holes as you can fill." And you're like, what?
I don't even know. But either way, it's a cool shirt.
Yeah, so it's super cool shirt. Yeah, yeah. Thank you guys.
Yeah, and thank you guys so much for giving to the Patreon. That's been a life changer.
Yeah, patreon.com/lastpodcastontheleft. If you guys want to contribute to not just Last Podcast on the Left, but to Cave Comedy Radio at large, because, you know, of course, we know a lot of people out there listen to all of our shows. Thank you so much for listening to every show me and Ben do, Abe Lincoln's Top Hat, Roundtable of Gentlemen, mm-hmm. the stuff that I do with Jackie Zabrowski, Sex and the Human Activities and Page 7, and my own little music show, The Lucky Bone Show, that you can find at Mixcloud.com/Marcus Parks.
Yes, very nice. And you can find Marcus Parks on Twitter at Marcus Parks and Instagram at Marcus Parks. On Instagram, I'm Ben Kissel 1. And on Twitter, I'm Ben Kissel. I'm almost at 10,000. I'm going to get there. And when I get there, my ego's going to go, "Who are you people?"
You're going to start doing that?
Yeah, who are you?
Well, my name is Henry Zabrowski. Mm. You can find me on Twitter at Henry Loves You, at Dr. Fantasty. And I do amazing levels of content everywhere we go. And my brand is increasing in popularity and societal thing. And I will escape from free speech jail.
You are still in jail, my friend.
Ding, 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 ding. There's a man in here. And he says he wants to take me to the shower room. And I said, "No, sir, this is free speech jail."
You've got to go with him. I'm a published author, by the way, so I'm going to start saying things like, "I've never."
You're a published author?
Yeah, Heat Street published my work. Oh. All about third parties. Mm. Check it out. It's a great article.
Yeah.
Did you read it?
I haven't read it. I've been off the internet for 2 days.
It went Ben Kissel viral.
Which means?
15 people.
35,000. 35,000. No, I don't know. It was very good, though. It was a very successful article. So I'll be writing more of those. So I'm an author. So now, again, well, I've never. That's also what they say.
I'm going to post it somewhere. I've been reading this really interesting academic article that's like talking about like the philosophy behind whether or not we live in a hologram or some sort of simulation. I got to tell you, it's complicated.
Post it up.
And I got to say, let's change the simulation up. Like a little bit.
I want to be shorter.
I want more cash.
Oh, yeah. That would actually really help. And so you guys are, and with the Patreon, you guys are changing our reality with that. Yeah. So thank you.
We're changing everybody's reality.
I'm going to say hail yourselves. And do we want to plug the, what do we got? Baltimore coming up.
Baltimore on August 19th. Actually, it's a week from Friday.
Oh, my God.
Yeah. August 19th. Coming back to Baltimore. GetAutoBar.com or Bad Auto or something like that. Just Google.
You'll get it.
Figure it out.
Also,
you're smart people.
I believe I can officially say this, but I'm not sure the time of yet. It's supposed to come through. We're going to be giving a stream, live stream show for AdultSwim.com, which will be starting next Friday, hopefully. And we will definitely confirm that with a time. We'll announce it on the Facebook page, but I'm very excited.
I say we stay it out. We say it out loud and make it a reality.
Yeah. Exactly, because then it becomes a reality, legally or not.
That's correct.
Hail Satan, everyone.
Hail yourselves.
And hail Gain.
And let's leave the kids alone for a second.
For like a whole lifetime.
You know what? Instead of molesting the kids, you know what you do? You tap them on the shoulder and you say, "Hey, little bud, may goose-delation."
You can be president.
You just can be president.
Man, my bottom is really uncomfortable. I don't know what it is.
Yeah?
It's like a thing. I got like something going on in my bottom.
Yeah, is it your rupture?
It's all those needles stuck
in
there.
Oh, it's the needles.
That explains it.
Yeah, it's time for more shout-outs, everybody. Yeah, remember, I know a lot of people said last week, I didn't hear my name. That's because we have a lot of names to go through. So be sure to tune back every week to see if this is your week to be shouted out.
It's like our version of the Vietnam War Memorial.
Yeah, you're coming into the draft as well. We're drafting you into the big leagues here of the last podcast on the left. It reminds me also when I was in the tombs for 24 hours how exciting it was to hear my name, because then you get to get out.
Because it's like you're a celebrity for a second, but you're in jail.
Yeah. All right, so the first name that I have here on my magical list, it belongs to a fellow named Russell Metalozo.
Mm.
Isn't that a fun name? Andrew Pomaville, and Pomeranians are my favorite animal, so that's a whole village full of them. Pomaville. Zernabog. He sounds like a cyborg. I love him. This person, his name is UKHC. So I don't know how to say that.
British Hillary Clinton.
Oh, there it is. Kelly Carpenter, Candace Whitaker, Mark Olay, Nick Lazelle, Sasha Sparks. Sounds fancy.
Mm. Sexy.
Yeah. Joe Ballinger and Brent B. Thank you guys so much.
C Bone Jones 420, dude.
Bro!
Thank you, bro. Fucking smoke that leaf, you piece of shit.
Nice guy.
He is nice. Jacob. Boring.
No, good guy.
Jake rides again. What happened the first time, Jake? What did you do the first time? What did you fuck up? Mm-hmm. I'm glad you're back. Bobby Johns. Trevor Hine, which is short for Heine.
Huh. Mm.
Charlotte Collins. Hi, my name is Charlotte Collins. That is not a fake name. I am a woman. Rob K. Rylecamp at yahoo.com. Is that your name? Do you sell your name to yahoo.com?
I would.
Nikki Lee.
Hmm.
Emil H. And Megan Rounds.
I would sell my name to Hotmail, but spell it M-A-L-E.
Megan Rounds is also... Rounds is also a term that I also imagine that Albert Fish would use instead of peewees.
Good point.
I got Coleman Brown, Sean Earl Beard, Heather Shane, Riley Cisco, Keith Cassidy, Michelle Nee, Leslie Alfaro. Leslie Alfaro.
I know Leslie Alfaro. Yeah, she's been around. She came into Chicago show. She's lovely.
Great.
Wonderful human.
Great.
Yeah.
Small. Very small.
That's good. God made us in all different sizes.
And speaking of people who have come to the show, Chyna White, one of the Go-Go Ghost Girls out of Pittsburgh.
Queens of NC17, I believe, is their podcast.
Mm-hmm. Yes, follow them on Facebook. They are always coming up with hilarious videos.
Yeah, they are. There's Sarah Young, Naya Henderson, Jared Counts, and Bedlam.
Ooh.
Simply Bedlam.
Is he one of those amateur superheroes? Like they had that guy in Tucson?
Yeah.
The Phoenix, I think it was called?
I like Bedham more because I eat ham in bed.
Disgusting.
All right. My list continues. There's a fella, his name is Prue, P-R-U-E. So thank you, Prue. Kimberly Pulaski. She's an N away from being a director. Kate. Okay. Kimmy. Ooh, this is a fun one. Amanda Hogg.
It is nice.
That's a nice name. Tamara Sellers, Lucy James, Ian Graff, Tanner Elberty, and Franklin Smith. Thank you guys very, very much.
Jason Whedell, Tom Connolly, thank you, Irishman, Tina Broccoli.
Ooh, broccoli?
Tina Broccoli. Tiny little feet on that Tina Broccoli.
If Amanda Ham, or Amanda Hogg, and Broccoli got together, we almost have a dinner.
Mikel Falk. Shane Smith, who sounds like a wide receiver.
Yeah, isn't that the dude who owns Vice?
Shane Smith, yeah.
All right.
So the owner for Vice is
that's a big number. I mean, write a fucking article about us.
Yeah, maybe. That would be nice.
Justin. Andrew Boyer. Mike Freeman. Derek Spencer. And Matthew Elders.
Hmm.
Thank you, and hail Satan.
Thank you, hail yourselves. I got a guy named Phil Kanaki. Phil Kanaki. I love this guy, Phil Kanaki. And then we got a fella named Slew. It might be a girl. S-L-E-W. Slew.
Slew.
So he's a bass player. Sabrina Stenson. Mary Parker. Scott Murray. James T. Lucia. Stephanie May. Sean Cumstock. Hilland Hall. And Spencer.
Caroline Butker. Thank you. Chris Scales. You fishy bastard. Byron Dunlap. Willie Freischel, Luke Morse, Jared Call, Griffin Meckelberg, Claire Irby, Olivia Beasley, Jarrett Luce.
I like Olivia Beasley. She sounds like she's a detective, and she's going to find out who graffitied the school.
And it turned out it's Albert Fish.
Oh, my God.
God. And he has been up to much worse than just graffitiing the school.
It's brown.
All right, we got three more names here. Laura McGinnis, Katie Wendt, and Adam Barrett. From the bottom of our wonderful hearts, thank you. Oh, you have more.
I got one more. Katrina English, great language.
Yes.
Chris Day, Patrick Sparrow, and Lindsay Brazel.
Yes. Thank everybody so much for giving to our Patreon. Thank you so much. We couldn't tell you if you want to give and you haven't given yet, patreon.com/lastpodcast on the left is the place. Thank you guys so much. Couldn't tell you how much it means to us. And we'll see you all soon. Megustalations one and all.
Hail Satan.
Hail yourselves.
And we owe all of you a tug.
Yep. And that's, or a hug.
I would prefer a hug.
Tug and a hug.
Oh.
All right. For more shows like the one you just listened to, go to cavecomedyradio.com.